Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Joining us now is the ambassador from the bright side of the road, the one and only, the only man who's ever worn the title of All Marine Radio Head Chef, P. Kimball Holmes. Kim, what is up?
I am, baby.
You are.
Out there in up, big, bad, beautiful rocket ship up in that stratosphere. Let me hear you loud and clear. Hey, mommy-o's. Hey, daddy-o's. This is your astronaut, Kimbo. I'm back on the scene in my walking machine going oop oop doo doo wah.
There you go. There you go. The more, you know, I identify this song with you now, right? This song kind of got on my playlist when a good friend of ours, a guy by the name of Hal Gershman, he played this. He was being honored as an alum of the University of North Dakota, and I wasn't invited to the event, or maybe I wasn't in town. I can't remember. But
you, Kim, were my date. You were my date.
Was that your date? No, I wasn't. but they played. He loves this song, and so. I started playing it when he would come on, right? But now I don't associate it with Hal as much as I associate it with Kim. So, sorry, Hal. Anyway, Van the Man Morrison here on a Friday. Big birthday weekend. Marine Corps turns 244 years old. That's a big deal. Yeah. So happy birthday to all the Marines out there. And everybody who's all of our girls, all of our boys, all of our kids, all of our parents, right? So happy birthday to everybody. And that's the appropriate greeting. If you know Marines, right, call their dumbasses up and say, hey, happy birthday, Marine, right? And it's everybody's birthday, right? It's Colleen's birthday this weekend. And guess who's turning 30 years old this weekend?
Patrick.
Patrick. Patrick was born on the Marine Corps birthday.
Marine Corps.
30 years old, man. Woo! Halfway to 60.
Oh, baby. Welcome to my world.
Yeah. Let me just tell you this. He doesn't think that's very funny. I said, what?
Why?
I don't know. What's wrong, bro? He's like, yeah, we don't need to. We don't, like, why we got to talk about the number? Why can't we just celebrate my birthday? I'm like, oh, now that we know you're sensitive about it, you know we got to go there.
Oh.
So, please. Yeah, 30. Come on.
That's like when I celebrated my 30th birthday, and was at a party. Oh,
I don't even know. It would have been, for me, it would have been 1987.
Yeah.
Right? I would have turned 30. Where the hell was I in December of 1987? I'll tell you where I was. I was in the Indian Ocean, I think. I was on the USS Ranger. I was deployed. I turned 30th. It was not a very big celebration, as I recall.
Yeah.
But I think when we got ashore, we were coming back from being deployed. I was on an aircraft carrier, right? And we went to the Indian Ocean, and we tore up a bunch of Iranian stuff while we were over there. And then by about December 7th, I think we were on our way back because we got back. I mean, it's about a 2.5 week, 3 week cruise to get back from the Indian Ocean. And you make a couple port visits on the way. And so I think we were on the way back. I'm sure we were. I'm not exactly sure where exactly it was, but I visited Thailand for the first time in my life, on the way back. That was a little bit of a different experience. Strip joints and kickboxing in the same venue. And, you know, when you're 30 years old, it's like, am I in heaven? Like, what's going on here? What happened? And there's, what's going on here? Right? And so I have a great picture of me with a boa constrictor wrapped around my shoulders, right? And then the thing was like drugged out of its mind, right? So you could take pictures with it and it wouldn't kill you. And that's a picture. Yeah, that's a picture that Catherine took to her and put it up. This is my dad. I'm drunk as a skunk in the picture. And I went to read a story during story time at Century Elementary School, when I think Catherine's in kindergarten or first grade. And I walk in, and here's Catherine, all her friends, right? And then they start just saying, snake man, snake man. I'm like, and I look at the teacher, I'm like, what is that about? And she said, oh, let me show you something. And so we walk over to the wall, and here's the picture of me drunker than shit with a snake on me up in Catherine's first grade classroom.
I can't believe that.
You know, and I'm like, what the fuck? Right? And I'm like, Susan, like, what is Susan doing? Like, why could you let that picture out of the house? So I went home. I'm like, really? Right? Me hammered. I've been calling. She's like, what? It's a funny picture. I'm like, oh, my God. So that happened. I got to Thailand. You know, going out there, we stopped in Singapore. We stopped in. We were supposed to stop in Hong Kong, but we didn't because there was a typhoon. And then we stopped in Hong Kong on the way back. And then we were in the Philippines, you know, loading supplies and stuff when we used to have a big naval base there. And then a typhoon came, so we were only there for a couple of days, and we had to put back out to sea because that's the safest place in a typhoon. And then I think we stopped in Singapore. And Singapore, you know, all the places that the Brits were are incredibly beautiful cities.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, incredibly beautiful cities. And that's when that shit was going on when the people in Singapore were going to cane that kid. Remember that kid who spray-painted shit on cars and got caught? And they said, oh.
Been on the street, didn't he?
No. No, it was, he was spray-painting graffiti. He fucked up cars, man. Kid was a shithead. And then he gets.
Cane him, though.
Yeah, and then, so they were going to, oh, yeah, we got something for your ass, right? And then, oh, you can't cane him, he's an American. Oh, yeah, we can. I didn't even know if they ever did actually cane him.
Yeah, they did cane him.
Oh, man, you know what?
And then deported him.
Yeah, let me tell you. Yeah, you want to stop graffiti? Cane their ass, man, when you catch him. Publicly cane their ass. And let me tell you, cane, right? Right? Cane them. What do you cane them with? Right?
Cane them with bamboo.
Oh, shit. Now, when we think of bamboo, we think of, like, the little bamboo things that you see at, like, Ace Hardware that you put around your patio with a little mesh thing in between. You know, like, some shit like that, right? Oh, let me tell you. We're in Hong Kong, and they have all this like Santa lighting on all these skyscrapers. It's amazing. In downtown Hong Kong is built vertically because it goes from like the water to mountains in very short space. It's that's why it's such a spectacular city, right? And the skyscrapers, they have all the Santa shit, all these lights on them. It's like, whoa, it's kind of cool, man. Who knew the Chinese did Santa Claus, man. So we've got there after my birthday, right, on the way home. So we're cruising around, and you have all these families, and the whole family's there. Grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, all the kids, right? Everybody's out, like, looking at the lights. And so you're like, wow, how do they do that? You know? And so you get close to it, and you see all the scaffolding up the side of the building that surrounds the building. And the lights are hung, you know, either on the building or on the scaffolding. Well, guess what the scaffolding is? It's fucking bamboo.
That's right.
And you're looking at this shit going up like six stories, and it's bamboo with these leather straps. They might have been synthetic, but I think they were leather, right? Leather straps.
I've seen close-ups of those.
You're like, woo. Now, that's bamboo, okay? Bamboo is some strong shit. And when they whoop your ass with it, yeah, trust me.
Yeah. They wet it, too. They get it wet, so it's very pliable.
Get a little whip. You know, get a little whip to it.
Get a whip to it, and I'd rather have a bull whip.
Yeah, you want to be? Hey, why don't they have a graffiti problem in Hong Kong? Oh, I'll tell you what. Because they'll cane your ass. You know what? Simple solutions to simple problems, right? Oh, you can't do that. Oh, you might like, yeah. Look, you want to do stupid shit? We'll do stupid shit. But yeah, bamboo is not really the shit you want to screw with. But yeah, it was, that's where I turned 30. Turned 30 on a ship in the Indian Ocean. And then we did the whole, we crossed the line not too long after that. In fact, hold on. Let me grab my showback certificate. One sec. It's hanging here on my wall.
Yeah?
Yeah, hold on. And I can tell you the day that we crossed the equator, which was about that time. So let me grab my certificate, because we went to Thailand. And let's see, what day is it? On this 19th day of November, 1987. So we were on our way back on the 19th. Of November. That's earlier than I thought. We didn't get back till, I think we got back before Christmas. But, so yeah. Yeah, we were on our way home, and we did the whole shellback ceremony, which was hilarious. You talk about a fun day. That was a fun day. And I don't know that they do it like that anymore, but, it was a good time. So, anyhow. My 30th birthday. So where were you when you turned 30? What were you doing? Were you in Switzerland doing your European tour?
There were about 20 of us. We went out to dinner at this restaurant. I've sent you a picture of that. I'm pretty sure you have it. If not, I'll send it today. And then we went down to a friend's house. And somebody had come in from Amsterdam with party favors and had made some chocolate chip space cookies. And so we each ate a space cookie and partied into the next day.
What's a space cookie?
A cookie that's cooked with hashish. And we walked with the Lord for the rest of the night.
That's terrible. You're not supposed to do that stuff on your birthday?
Oh, yeah. 30th birthday? That's absolutely true. 1974. Hey. March 26th. So, and beautiful time.
So yesterday, I went down and did my post-traumatic winning thing with the first Marine Corps unit I was ever part of. First battalion of the 5th Marine Regiment, right? I was a second lieutenant when I was 25 years old, right, in that unit, right? And so yesterday I was reading, you know, the lineage, like where the unit comes from and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm scrolling down the page, and I look over to the right, and there's a picture of me with my Marines in 1985.
Wow.
on the Wikipedia page. I'm like, brah, that's, I look, I'm like, holy shit, that's me. And there I am, right, with my Marines. We had just finished up this thing we did in the desert. And, it was, we're on the Wikipedia page, man. It was awesome. So, I did it with spouses from the unit last night, and it was, Kimmich's the coolest thing you've ever seen in your life. It just blows me away. It blows me away because, it's really interesting because post-traumatic winning, really, I'm not a therapist, right? Although I do play one on the radio. Being a cook, I play one on the radio. I play a chef on the radio. And an auto mechanic. I also play that on the radio. And I will play the role of electrician on the radio, too. I have experience in all those fields. So, post-traumatic winning, if you have structural mental health issues, you got to fix that stuff first. But the majority of the suicide in this country are not people that are bipolar, schizophrenic, right, or manically depressed, right? Is everyday people that are overwhelmed by life, right? And that's what post-traumatic winning speaks to. And so you see how much people struggle, right? You see how thirsty they are for an answer. And when you look at them and say, look, man, the answer is not in medication. The answer is not even in talk therapy, although both of those may be a part of getting to the good place, right? The answer is to selflessly give and help other people that are going through your experience or have already gone through your experience and are in the darkness. Share this truth, change their lives. And it is, their response is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And it is the coolest thing in the world to watch and to do and be a part of. And, it's like, holy shit. Holy shit. So that's why I got to get up to Grand Forks. You got to see it, man. Cause you've been around, when it was born, you've heard about it. We talked about it. And so you got to see it. You got to see it. Cause
I've been around from the start of it, Mac. And what I've seen it do to you and how it lights you up and how you can help other people, it just, overwhelms me. I'm just so proud and, appreciative of what you're doing. So, yeah, you got to get your ass up here.
No, and I'm going to make that happen. Kim already got the venue, man. Kim already secured the venue. I just got to touch a few wires and we're going to make it happen. We'll go we'll go save lives up in G-Funk, North Dakota. And let me just tell you, G-Funk is represented in post-traumatic winning every time I do it because, Ross Pape, is a part of it. Ross is part of this montage that I play when I tell people, look, if you struggle with trauma, you gotta stop drinking. Okay? You can't drink. Because alcohol unleashes the beast. Right? And the beast comes for not just you, the beast comes for your family, your friends, your kids, right? And you cannot do that, right? All you're going to do is you're going to fuck your life up. And if that was 100% true, I would not bother you with it. It's 1,000% true, okay? And so you got to come to grips with it, right? And if you want to sit there and say, yeah, fuck you, old dude, I ain't doing that, that's fine. But you're going to come to a crossroads in your life, right? And you better choose well, choose right, choose the better life, choose to win, right? But Ross Pape talks about his struggle. And Ross is, his family farms in East Grand Forks, Minnesota. I met his oldest brother, Riley, in Ramadi. Riley was killed, and all three brothers served, right? Two in the Marine Corps, and then Ross was in the Army. The deal was they were going to all farm together, right? They were going to take over the family farm. They were going to farm together. Well, his oldest brother was killed in a motorcycle accident just before he got off active duty. His youngest brother then joins the Marine Corps. His youngest brother, Ryan, is killed in a parachute accident at Camp Pendleton. And so now Ross farms alone. And he struggled. And he used alcohol to medicate himself, to cope. And so Ross does this awesome thing. And he says, yeah, by far, you know, quitting drinking was the only thing that made a difference in my life. I was on, you know, medications for anxiety, depression, to sleep, blah, 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 blah. And he does this really cool thing. And I play a clip of my sister Peggy talking about, you know, drinking because she loved the party. Jeremiah Workman, who's another Marine. And then a guy who's a Vietnam guy, Ken Rogers, who talks about, he came home and got drunk for 30 years. And when he says drunk, he says, and I'm talking about a case of beer a day and a bottle of wine or a half a fifth of whiskey at night. Yeah, that's like serious. That's like serious game. And, yes. But, and they were all self-medicated. So Grand Forks gets represented every time I do it. I look at him, there's a series of pictures of him and his brothers, and so I do got to get my ass up there. So he can do that in person.
He can do that
in person. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. I've got a couple of food questions from last week. So let me find, this is wild pheasant. Hey, Mac, I know North Dakota and South Dakota are good for pheasants. Does Kim have a good pheasant recipe?
Yeah, I do. I have my dentist.
What?
Every time I go to the dentist, pulls out some pheasant or some other kind of bird, wild bird that he shoots. And I like to cook them in the oven. I wash them, pat them dry, put garlic in the cavity, and I use orange because I make a sauce of the orange juice that I squeeze and the drippings from the pheasant. It's a very lean bird. It's delicious. And then I roast it slowly. Covered for about 40 minutes, and at 325, then I take the cover off and let it finish, kick up the heat to about 350, and get out the skin a little crisp, and pull it out. And so it steams and tenderizes it, and if you want, you can you soak it in salt and sugar overnight, and that works too. That makes it even more tender. But anyway, I'll take the bird out, I'll wrap it in foil and let it sit on a plate, and then the drippings, I add a little bit of fresh orange and some orange rind, and like a little shot of Grand Marnier.
Ooh.
That's an orange-based liqueur. And I flame that liqueur so it burns the alcohol off but still maintains the flavor. And then I'll add a little bit of Wondra and thicken it to whatever you want. And if you want to make more sauce, you'll add a little bit of chicken stock. And there you have it. Very simple, or you could split the bird and fry it and cook it that way.
So
but I like to.
So explain to me the whole orange Grand Marnier thing. Is it simply the best taste you ever had as you ate pheasant?
Yeah, I think it's one of the best tastes. I used to do duck that way. Call it duck l'orange. That's French for orange.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought, I'm going to apply this to this pheasant. And it was great. My goodness. Now, pheasant isn't as fat. It's a very lean, muscular bird. So, you know, if you want to put it in a brine for a day, that'll certainly help tenderize it. you know, equal parts of sugar and salt, and then cover it in water, and just let it sit there, and then make sure you thoroughly rinse it before you, and take some orange rind and put it on the outside of the skin and in the cavity, and maybe take, half the orange and squeeze, and cut it in a section, you know, cut it in half and then stuff the cavity with it. So you get that flavor. And garlic, of course, garlic.
Of course.
And then salt and pepper, and that's it. And then a little water in the bottom of the pan. I would do chicken stock because that chicken stock will cook down. You want to have enough of the drippings and that chicken stock mixed together to when you add the Grand Marnier and the rest of the orange juice. And the rind, grate it, you know. It's fabulous.
Wow. Fabulous. It sounds complicated, is it? I mean, does it sound more complicated than actually?
Because I took a long way around explaining it. But it might seem so the first time. But if it works for you, that's the one you'll use all the time. And if you want to try it on duck, that's even better.
Really?
But you got to cook these birds, ducks or pheasants. You got to cook them on a raised rack off of the roasting pan, so the drippings go and the bottom doesn't burn or get soggy in the oven. Does that make sense to you?
No. So why am I cooking? Like, I understand cooking on a raised rack, right? Roast. You're baking it on a. Are you?
Yeah, but it's also the first 45 minutes is covered. Okay.
Got it.
It's tightly covered by aluminum foil, so all that evaporate the steam from the water, the chicken stock or water, whatever you use, and any of the drippings will help tenderize the bird. And then the last 15 minutes with the foil off and the temperature turned up a little bit will help crisp the skin of the bird. You know how we all like crisp skin.
Right. Interesting. No, I guess like all things... Like all things, might be a little daunting at first, but after you mess with it a little bit, I'm sure people that do pheasant listened to that and said, "Oh yeah, that's cool. I could do that." It just sounded a little bit on the complicated side for old Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah, but a lot of people will do a mushroom chicken stock and cream sauce and you put them and throw them in your crock pot and cook them that way, real long and slow. That's another way to do it. That's the real easy way to do it. But you'll have a nice gravy when you're done with it, though.
You know, we talked about it before, but the crock pot is one of the great culinary inventions of all time.
Oh, my God, yes. And they've got these new crock pots that do so many different things. It confuses me. I go into Bed Bath & Beyond and start reading about it because I want one. They take the normal crock pot and kick it up a couple of notches.
And so what do they do? So now you have, what, timers on them and different? So you can cook it for this amount of time at this temperature and then dials it down this? What else would they do?
Yeah, they crisp things up in a
really?
Crock pot.
They, how do they? I didn't think. I thought crisp crock pot doesn't do crispy. It does soggy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And now crock pot does crispy. How does a crock pot do crispy?
For one of those things that looks like a crock pot, it's got about 3,000 gadgets on it, buttons, and intimidates the heck out of me. You know, I'm just an old throw it in a cast iron skillet and fry the shit out of this guy.
Yeah, but you discovered the crock pot, right?
Yeah. My wife turned me on to the crock pot.
Yeah.
And she knows how to use it.
No, I mean, when stuff sits in its own juices all day and slow cooks, I mean, come on, that's a recipe for, like, good flavor, right? Good flavor. So that's awesome. Have you seen? We do a program about new cooking technology, and Kim goes to Bed Bath and Beyond and does a little perusing. But have you seen anything that lately cooking technology that jumps out at you?
Yeah, and my wife won't let me get it. It's just. It's just stupid interesting. It's a like a roasting oven, you know, you put on your countertop.
Right.
But it does, like, it air fries. You can put French fries in there, just throw them in there, and they come out like McDonald's French fries.
So explain this to me, like.
Well, it uses dry heat and a convection component, right, and circulates the air. And you can do chicken wings in there.
Wow.
You can do all kinds of stuff. And I always liked toaster ovens. I always thought, you know, you can pretty much eliminate your oven until it's Thanksgiving. With this toaster oven. It does everything. And this one I saw is one of those multi-faceted pieces of kitchen equipment. But you got to be careful, folks, because there are certain basic ones you want to have, and then you can get caught up in the buying, and then you'd have no room on your kitchen counter except for the equipment. So, you know, pick and choose carefully. How often you're going to use it, and what are you going to use it for? We have on our counter, we have a Vitamix, that's a blender. We have the KitchenAid mixer for mixing up my cornbread or best baking, whether it's cookies or pies or cakes, the crusts. And then in a pull-out drawer we have in our kitchen, we have our Cuisinart for slicing, dicing, and chopping and pureeing, like pesto, basil, and salt, right, and olive oil for our pesto base. But that's about it for us. We don't have any other pieces of equipment. And that's it. And then pots and pans. My trusty cast iron 12-inch and 8-inch cast iron skillets.
Those are the tools of the trade. That's what the master uses.
Well, everybody should have a cast iron, at least a 12-ounce, a 12-inch cast iron skillet in your repertoire of pots and pans.
But you, I think. Right. I don't disagree with you, but that's not on your countertop, right? I mean, that's someplace in a cupboard someplace.
We have our cabinets open up, and then there are drawers that pull out that are inside the cabinet. So nothing gets caught in the back, you know, or you forget about something. You pull it out, and you can see everything. Yeah, she's got one thing that has four drawers that are about, I don't know, 18 inches deep each.
Ooh.
And they pull out, and then we have other doors that open, and then the shelf slides out, pulls out.
Let me ask you this. When you look at a kitchen and to decide if it's cook-friendly, what are the things that you look at? You just mentioned how deep a drawer was. When you, as somebody who goes in to see if it, and I'm talking about a home kitchen, right?
Yeah.
If it is well adorned, what are the things that you look for?
I look for... hopefully there's a knife holder on the countertop that holds all your serious knives, not cheapo knives. then where is the silverware located? And where is the, there's usually, we have a ceramic pot that holds our spatulas and our big spoons, or just easy reaching right beside the stove. And we have a large mortar and pestle, and that is a very heavy stone bowl that we grind up our own spice mix in. It has a big stone masher to mash them all together.
Got it.
Yeah, but that's what I look for. Where's the silverware located? Where are your dishes, glasses? You know, they all should be convenient to reach in and set in the table, or right, or getting something out of a drawer for when you're cooking. Excuse me. Kitchens are pretty systematic on how you set them up. That should be anyway.
All right. Let me ask you, would you be impressed with me if I told you that I now travel with cloth napkins and silverware?
No, I would be very proud of you.
I do. I like, because you know what? I do more traveling now than I think I've ever done in my life. And, you know, plastic spoons, really? You know, and so, I have a cloth napkin that I love, and I take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I take 5 pieces of silverware. I take both forks, both spoons, and a knife. And there's some things I keep in my backpack, and then other things I keep in my luggage. But I keep the cloth, the napkin, the silverware, and the small spoon and the small fork in my little backpack that doubles as, you know, my briefcase. Yeah, and this is my Orvis backpack, which I will tell you I have grown to love, man. That thing is awesome. And
it is.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's not cheap, but let me tell you, I'll have that thing for I don't know how many years because it's so well made and it's so good. It is so good. I love it. But yeah, and so now I don't like. Do you remember there used to be a whole industry devoted to airline food? As they were loading the luggage, you'd see the food truck back up and they would be wheeling in those carts of prepared food on the flights. That whole industry is gone. Airlines, unless you're flying overseas, they don't do that.
And sometimes it depends how long the overseas flight is, whether they do it either.
Yeah, but
read one airline, if the flight is under 6 hours, they don't serve food.
Amazing, right? It used to be like, would you like beef or chicken or another special? You waited for them to come. Now, I take my hydro flask that is like, it's very cool. Patrick turned me on to this technology. You can put water in there like 7 weeks ago and put some ice in there, and that thing will be cold today when you open it up. It's amazing. So I have water with Crystal Light in it that I like, and then I'll go by and I'll buy from one of those kiosks, I'll buy a turkey sandwich with Swiss cheese. Grab a little mayonnaise and mustard, and I throw that in my pack, and I might buy some chips, I might not, and then I get to eat anytime I want to, and it's good, man. It is good. The food is good, and it makes me, I don't know why it makes me happy, but every time they come by, they're like, could we get, I'm like, no, I'm fine. I got everything. Yeah. I got everything.
You figured it out.
I got everything.
If you don't take food on an airplane, I guess you don't want to eat.
No, you can buy the snack boxes and shit like that if you want to unload your wallet on it for them. And then the other thing is, you know, the sandwiches you can buy in airports now are actually pretty, I mean, healthy now. Because the nation buys more healthy food, so you can find that. You can find, you know, as opposed to stuff that we used to eat. So it makes traveling easy. So then I pull out my cloth napkin, and I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready to go.
That's so cool. And when you go through airports today, they're not just chain sandwich shops. There's some privately owned restaurants and sandwich shops that make great food. And by doing, by picking up a sandwich or a salad there, where it could be a tossed salad, potato salad, whatever the hell you want, if you know it's going to be good. When you buy those box lunch things on an airplane, you're getting carbs, sodium, and sugar. Enjoy. That's stuff.
The your grandmother would be very proud of me for your grandmother. Yeah, she'd be very proud of me for having such refined accoutrement as I travel. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, there you have it. What was
I am proud of you, Mac. I'd say.
What was your, well, you want, let me tell you what I, you know what piece of silverware I'm finicky about? Spoons. Okay?
Yeah.
I like soup spoons. Okay? And I don't care if I'm eating soup or if I'm eating ice cream. I like soup spoons. And, but you, not very many places have them, and I can't remember, and I don't know if I got it out of a Marine Corps MRE, but I found a great plastic soup spoon, and I held off to it for months, the same plastic spoon, and then something happened and it busted, and so I look for quality plastic utensils, and then I finally said, you know what, I'm done with that, like, let me take my stuff here at home with me, a little bit of home on the road. And now it makes me laugh when I do it. Like, oh my God, look at how refined he is. Him and his cloth napkin, which I own four of. I should probably own more. But
walking by and she hears you using the word cloth napkin. She's got this big ass grin on her face, saying, "You're hanging around Kim too much."
But you know, but I like it. I like it. And here's the other thing. I like cotton. Okay, this goes back to my days as a kid, right?
Yeah.
And my mom, Kathleen, she would dress me in wool because that's what people did then. I hated wool. I would cry. There's a picture of myself and my older sister taking a picture, right? And my older sister, Peggy. And I've got a red shirt on with gray wool pants on. And you can see my cheeks are red from crying because I did not want to wear that shit. And my whole life, man, I'll buy something new, and the first thing I do with it is I wash it. I ain't wearing it brand new. Do you remember when you used to get a new pair of Levi's when we were kids?
Oh, yeah.
Those things were a nightmare. They were stiffer than a board, and I wouldn't wear them. And that's why I learned. That's how I learned how to do wash when I was a little guy, because I would wash my jeans like 10 times before I would wear them. My mom would say, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm washing my jeans again. I don't like them, Mom." Kathleen was like, "All right, have at it, stud." And I would wash the shit out of them. But I have hated it. And so even with napkins, I like it to be kind of a little bit of a loose weave of cotton. I do not like synthetic blends. I don't like that. So I'm very kind of finicky about my cloth napkins.
My first restaurant in Port Townsend, the Blue Pear Cafe.
Yep.
I went over to Pier 1 and bought a bunch of Indian print bedspreads and brought them back, and I cut my napkins out of there and, you know, turned the edges over, but they were, you know, cotton and colorful, and you just throw them in the washing machine. But, yeah, I must have had, four or five dozen of those things. It was great. But yeah, gotta have linen napkins or cotton napkins.
Yeah, I'm a little finicky. I'm not gonna lie to you. Okay, and I become. The other thing that happened to me yesterday, like I told you, that this was the first battalion I was ever a part of. Right? The battalion commander, after he didn't know that, so I mentioned that to him when I met him yesterday morning. And so he went back and he dug through their shit. And he sends me a picture of me as when I'm 25 as a second lieutenant with my arms folded in front of me, looking like a motivated young lieutenant. So it was funny. It was funny. So it was cool. Yesterday was cool. And then last night, Kim, I mean, with spouses, it's really an amazing experience because, you know, everybody deals with it. Two Marines got up and spoke before I started yesterday. So the commanding officer introduced it, and then a Lance Corporal. So he's probably 21 years old. And he said, you know, we all deal with this stuff, and it's important they say this. Like, this is not about combat. This is the stuff of life. And he tells a story. He said, some of you may have heard the story. Some of you have not. And she tells the story of just hanging out in Huntington Beach on a weekend. They got done drinking. They came back to the room that they had rented, and there's a few of them. And they were running across the street to go get McDonald's. And yeah. One of them was hit and killed by a car.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so he's talking about it. And, you know, what he lives with. And, you know, the horrible experience of that night. And, you know, and then I heard about All Marine Radio and I started listening to it and it's helped me. And he said, a major stood up and he talks about, you know, his time as a Marine, but then he starts talking about his family. And he said, we had two children and our youngest daughter, you know, was born with birth defects. And he talks about, you know, about what a beautiful child she is and that she can't speak and they've all learned dactology, sign language, right? And so, you're listening to it and you're seeing them do this in public probably for the first time ever. And it's just the most amazing thing. And then you meet spouses who have their own story, right? And a lot of spouses subordinate their traumatic things in their lives because the perception is, well, he's gone to war. That's more significant. And then I look at him and I look at them and say, no, it's not. You know, it's not. You know, trauma is trauma is trauma. It doesn't matter how you get it. And mine doesn't trump yours. And
it's true.
And it's cool. And it's just really cool. So I get another chance to do that today. So I'm excited. I'm already.
That's so cool. Who are you speaking to today?
The other half of 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. So yeah.
Fantastic.
And today it's going to be the Marines that of Charlie Company are going to be there, which is my old company. Right. So I'm going to get a chance to talk shit with them. So, you know that is something that I do not mind doing. So, yeah, boom. The other thing is that, I think most of the nation, read about, the last time they read about 1st Battalion, 5th Marines was, when there was a lot of Marines that got arrested for, smuggling immigrants, right? And they were from the 1st Battalion of the 5th Marines. So you have a handful in an organization of 1,000 people, you have a handful of guys who, you know, turn their back on the values of the organization and for whatever reason do their own thing. And so I said, hey, look, you know, I've read about you all in the news lately. And with that, they like, rawr! And I said, let me just tell you, the only thing you do, right, this is a proud organization with a great heritage, right? The only thing you do is you write your own history. And you will show people by your performance who you are and what you are, right? And the detractors, simple answer to them, fuck you, okay? And they were like, whoa! I said, exactly, man. Exactly. And if they don't like it, fuck them twice. And they're laughing, but it was awesome. I loved it. I love that shit, too. So, anywho.
That's
What do you think about my 49ers, man? Are they legit? Are they for real?
Say, sometime during the day, your 49ers are undefeated. The only team left.
Yeah, but are they legit? Do you think they're legit?
I think they are legit. If they can be consistent, and they got a great defense now, that Boza guy is. I saw his brother last night on TV, playing for the Chargers.
Yeah.
I think they can go deep in the playoffs and maybe get to the championship game.
We'll see. Well, let me just tell you, I'll pass judgment after they play the Seahawks. The Seahawks have been the gold standard until last year when the Rams kind of became something, but the Rams are struggling this year. The Seahawks have been the best team, and let me tell you, that guy, their quarterback, Russell Wilson, who Patrick hates, Patrick has a hate for Russell Wilson, oh my God. So we'll see what happens, but it should be a great game. The Seahawks always have been good for the last, I don't know how many years, what, 10?
This weekend?
Monday night.
Oh, hot damn, Monday Night Football. Well, that is going to be the game of the year.
Yeah, so they play in San Francisco, and that is one, when they're good, that became a rivalry when Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll went. They had a rivalry with USC and Stanford, which Stanford had their way with them, and then they took that stuff to the 49ers and the Seahawks. But obviously it's cooled because the 49ers have sucked in the last 5 years, but not so much this year. So that'll be interesting.
He's got a great quarterback, Garofalo.
Oh, yeah. Well, but you know, that kid that, you know, here's what I don't understand. I watched the 49ers. To me, the most economic way to build a football team is to build it from your defensive line. Okay. Because you watch teams that have defensive lines like the 49ers, you can't throw the ball very much, right? So if you don't have time to throw, it means cornerbacks don't have to be great because they don't have to cover for long, right? And it means linebackers aren't going to have to take on double teams because you can't double team linebackers because you got to double team the defensive line. So it has this whole, and then your offense isn't going to have to score as many points. And it brought back to me, I mean, Jim McMahon, quarterback in the Chicago Bears, I mean, their defense annihilated people. And Jim McMahon, he's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, right? But they were really good. And
oh, they are.
Right? And so to me, it's like, you know, that seems like a pretty solid formula. And watching the 49ers do it this year, like, why don't more teams use that blueprint to get dominant defensive line? Because it simplifies everything. So, kind of a philosophical sports question here.
Well, I think that would be interesting to see. But the defense is where it starts.
Yeah.
And they all say that if you. And you got to have an offensive line too, because you got to give that quarterback that extra second to find his receiver or whatever. And you know, you got to have a balanced team, basically.
No, well, I think, but here's what I think. I think if I was building it, mine would be unbalanced to the defense. It would be a dominant defense, and you know, I don't think you need to score 40 points a game. And if you do. You know, the game that you run into a great defense and can't do that, you're in trouble. So, anyway. All right, you got big plans for the weekends?
Well, I got the Sioux in town. They're playing University of Miami, Ohio, Friday and Saturday at the Ralph. Football team, I think, is in town. NDSU keeps on rolling.
Yeah.
So, Sunday football.
All right, so you got a big sports weekend plan.
I've got Monday night football to look forward to. So it'll stretch my sports week another day.
Nice, nice. All right, man. First of all, thanks for the pheasant recipe, and give Miss B our best, and have a great weekend.
I will do that, and give all your family, your beautiful family, and wish P-Mac happy birthday.
I will. I will. Coming up on Sunday. All right, Kim, have a good one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right, there you have it. The one and only P. Kimball Holmes here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. That will do it. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. Hour one, we talk about doing post-traumatic winning with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. Yeah. And then you'll hear General Berger's birthday message. You can also find the video of the birthday message on a link there. So if you want to watch that, you can find the Commandant's birthday message in there. So have a great day on a Friday. Go change somebody's life with the wisdom that you get from All Marine Radio and all the different people that contribute to it, right? Just keep your ears open. When you get a chance, it all starts with this. Hey, man, can I talk to you? That's all you got to say. I'd like to share you something. You can help them live the high life. Back in the high life. That's where it goes, man. Have a great weekend on a Friday. Happy birthday, Devil Dogs and Devil Girls. 244th birthday of the greatest fighting organization that has existed on the planet, the United States Marine Corps. Happy birthday, everybody.